Well, a special good evening to you once again. I'm Gretchen Seeley, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show. We get together every Sunday evening. The specialist doctors come on board, and on this occasion, we have Dr. Kia Lewis. She has her team ready and rearing to go, so let's go over and say a very special good evening to Dr. Lewis. Good evening, Doc.
Hi, good evening, Gregson. How are you?
Yes, I'm not too bad. What about yourself?
I'm good. It's good to see you in the chair again. The last time I was here, you were missing, and we missed you.
Yeah, it was.
It's good to see that you're back out.
Yeah, it was a nice experience, but I'm back here, thank God. So,
yes, thank God indeed. So I just want to say a warm welcome. Good evening to our listeners here on the Better Health Radio Show. And as you know, this is a show which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health conditions that affect us all. It's my pleasure to host this evening's show yet again. And as usual, we have a very interesting topic for you. And you know, the show is not the same without you. So we want to encourage you to call in with your questions or comments for our guest this evening. Let me remind you that the number is 434-1790, 434-1790. And as usual, if you're radio shy, please feel free to send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. That's 266-4862. Now, before we go into the show, it's been a very, very hot summer so far. It's been a scorcher again today. And we do recognize that persons are going to be on the road tomorrow, whether they're playing mass or out with their families. We anticipate that persons are going to be out in the heat. So let me take the opportunity to remind you, we had a show on heat illnesses just about 2 weeks ago. Let me just remind you of some quick tips. Make sure that you have lots of water, that you're keeping yourself well hydrated. If you're out on the road for extended periods of time, please also replace those electrolytes, coconut water or water with a little bit of lime. That's a good option for replacing those electrolytes. And I know that a lot of people of color do not believe that we need sunscreen, but as long as you have skin, your skin can burn. So by all means, make sure that you have your sunscreen and that you're protecting your skin. Don't overdo it with the alcohol. It may sound silly on the day before Grand Kaduma even saying it, but he that has an ear, let him hear. Don't overdo it on the alcohol because that can lead to further dehydration. And those are just a few tips. Whenever you get the chance, go into some shade. You know, just protect yourself from too much sun. We want you to enjoy your holiday safely. With all of that said, I'm really looking forward to this evening's show. This week is World Breastfeeding Week. And I know that with all the crop over events, sometimes we don't hear as much as we should about this topic during this week. But we're going to take the opportunity to discuss it this evening. And as usual, we have two well-experienced guests on board with us. I'm going to introduce you to both of them, and then we will start with the questions as usual. So first of all, we have Dr. Allison Bernard. Let me tell you a little bit about her. She is a pediatrician. She's been practicing medicine for the last 20 years. She is a wife and mother of two girls, 11 and 13 years old, and breastfed both children for nearly 3 years in total. So not just the head knowledge, but she's actually practicing what she preaches. After receiving her MBBS at the University of the West Indies, she went on to do her postgraduate training in pediatrics in the United Kingdom. With that first exposure during medical internship, her decade overseas then instilled an acceptance of breastfeeding as optimal nutrition and the need to preserve its practice at all costs. This sensitized her to the essential role of non-governmental organizations in the implementation of much-needed programs and projects. She also has a master's in public health, and she is the executive director of the Breastfeeding and Child Nutrition Foundation. I'm going to let her tell us a little bit about that organization as we go on. Now, a high-level goal of this organization and Dr. Bernard's work is to stem the tide of childhood obesity and non-communicable diseases. And so she sits on the National Breastfeeding Committee and is a member of the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition. Dr. Bernard's passion for early childhood nutrition drives her desire to support and empower mothers and families to choose the healthiest and most optimal nutrition for their children. Welcome, Dr. Bernard.
Thank you, Dr. Lewis. I'm really, really happy to be here today.
Yes, and we're happy to have you. Let me introduce Michelle Marshall. Ms. Marshall is a registered nurse with over 26 years experience, a registered midwife, and a public health sister. Ms. Marshall is very interested in reducing NCDs, and currently she is a part of the NCD Commission, where she leads the nutrition team. Ms. Marshall is very passionate about evidence-based nursing, and to this end, she is committed to educating the public on this issue. Ms. Marshall, warm welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Good evening, Dr. Lewis. Thank you for having me.
Privileged to have you. So I'm going to start off with you, Dr. Benoit. I want you to tell us a little bit about the Breastfeeding and Child Nutrition Foundation, because this is an organization that's doing very important work, but we recognize that, you know, there are people who do not know a lot about it. Can you share just a little bit about that organization with us?
Of course. Okay, so yes, we are not well known, which is something that we're working on, but we've been around since 2015. We're a registered charity here in Barbados, and our mandate, like most organizations of our type, is to promote, protect, and support breastfeeding. We've expanded our mandate as well in terms of providing parents, families with evidence-based information, not just about breastfeeding, but about complementary feeding, which, as you know, Kia, and I'm sure Michelle knows as well, is that after you've birthed them, you've breastfed them, you have to feed them solid foods, and that can be an extremely challenging period for a lot of parents. Often they have questions about that, they don't know what to do. So we've expanded our mandate around that, because breastfeeding and complementary feeding, the impact in terms of doing that optimally has implications for childhood obesity and the non-communicable diseases. So yeah, we've been around for a while. We have lots of different services as it relates to consultations, breastfeeding classes. And I guess at the end of the show, I'll give people a bit more information about how they can access our services if they need to. But yeah, that's a little bit about us.
Yeah, excellent work that you're doing there, Dr. Benoit. I'm sure that a lot of people don't know that there are breastfeeding classes available in Barbados, that they can see a lactation consultant if they're having problems, you know, and all the other services that you offer. So excellent work to you and your team.
Thank you.
I want to move over to Michelle. Michelle, why are we even having this discussion? Can you tell us a little bit about some of the benefits of breastfeeding? And we know that there are benefits to both mommy and baby. So can you tell us a little bit about the benefits of breastfeeding?
Good evening again. Well, the benefits of breastfeeding to the mother is, I guess, no secret to those persons who have breastfed. Well, I've heard the champion conversation that we've been having since we became a breastfeeding kind of society. But for the mother, if she's breastfeeding, think about it. We are in these hard economic times where persons are expressing great dissatisfaction with the cost of living. And if you are breastfeeding, you don't have to buy formula. That in itself is a great, great, great service. And that also complements the other thing, whereas you're actually helping the environment, because if you're not buying formula, then you don't have to dispose of formula, or there's probably a decrease in the amount of formula that has to be made. After you get your baby and you want to get back down to your pre-pregnant state, and there's been scientific evidence to suggest that if you breastfeed your baby or if you offer your baby breast milk, your uterus contracts, and there's even a decreased risk of even bleeding after you've had your baby. You know, mm-hmm. Even for the baby, it's for the baby his or herself. They have so many benefits. It's like their first immunization to think about it, because the breast milk is loaded with so much nutrition and immunoglobulins and antibodies and all this thing, that the baby that is exposed to breast milk and the colostrum within the first hours of life, I tell you, evidence is suggesting these children are actually prone to have higher IQs. Dr. Bernard, I mean, I don't know if much more I can expand on it. The benefits are so overwhelming. I could talk for hours and hours and hours and hours. But the most important thing for me is that you don't have to buy it. And that it creates a bond between you and your baby. And that bond really cannot be replaced or bought. to be honest. That's it.
Absolutely. Dr. Bernard, did you want to add anything?
Yes. So absolutely, Michelle was very eloquent in speaking to, I mean, you got to be practical here, and things are hard, and that's, I think, and for most people, top of mind, this is hard. Formula is like, what, $30 to $50 a tin? And then you're buying that every week. And actually, we have worked out that if you exclusively breastfed for about 6 months, which is what World Health, Health Organization recommends, you could save about $800. I mean, at a minimum. So it's a significant savings for you. But also, we can talk about the fact that if you breastfeed your baby and if you do it exclusively and do it as recommended, then your child is, as Michelle said, less infection. So less ear infections, less gastroenteritis, less respiratory. So which means that mommy ain't going to the GP every 5 minutes with baby for an ear infection and buying antibiotics. And so another cost savings, as well as she's not missing out on work. So there's less. So if you want to talk about benefit to someone other than the mummy and the parent, the benefit to the employer is less employee absenteeism. So there's that. But I also wanted to mention as well that there benefits the mums in terms of organic disease. So their risk for breast cancer decreases. So for every year that mummy breastfeeds, she lowers her risk by almost 5%. You know, she has a reduced risk of ovarian cancer, a reduced risk of osteoporosis, a reduced risk of diabetes mellitus, the NCD that is, you know, up front and center in our minds when we talk about NCDs. So there's loads and loads of benefits. And as Michelle said, too much to enumerate. So, but that's a snapshot, a snippet of the benefits of breastfeeding.
I think both of you have made excellent points. Michelle, talking about even the impact on the environment, you know, how breastfeeding can assist with that. But then more personally, I think a lot of people do not know that breastfeeding reduces your risk of NCDs, diabetes, and cancers, and so forth. So excellent points that you've made. So, you know, you mentioned in your answer, the recommended time for breastfeeding is 6 months. This is exclusively, which means that you're not giving baby anything else, no water, you know, no juice, nothing to top up. You're just breastfeeding baby. And that's really important. Exclusively is what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that mothers struggle with is how often should you be breastfeeding that baby? How often should you be breastfeeding that baby? I don't know if Allison or Michelle, which one of you would want to tackle that one?
I could just mention it and then Michelle can jump in with anything extra. So when I talk to the moms that I consult with and I'm giving them, and they tell me how tired they are, they're so tired. And I say to them, well, breast milk is a fluid that sits in baby's stomachs, and maybe after 45 minutes to an hour, it's digested. It's literally created for your baby's gut. So there's no faffing about. It's in there, and then it's gone in 45 minutes to an hour. So babies need to feed regularly. You can't feed a baby. More often than not, you're going to have a baby that's going to feed, especially in the first few weeks of life, at least 10 to 12 hours. They're going to feed every 1 to 2 hours. So 10 to 12 times a day.
Right? 10 to 12 times a day.
So babies feed frequently. So that when people say, oh my gosh, baby feeding again. You ain't got enough milk. There's something wrong with your milk supply. Totally ignore that. Mm-hmm. That message that you're getting, you know, as we know, as parents, if you get that message, then you feel like you lose confidence and you feel as though your body isn't doing it. But the fact is your baby is doing exactly what they're supposed to do. And if you are supplying as they demand, you'll make enough milk and baby will be well fed.
So every 1 to 2 hours, so it's not shocking. So we have our first caller this evening. So we want to welcome our caller. Welcome to the Better Health Show.
Yes, thank you very much indeed. How are you this evening, Dr. Lewis?
I am well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, wonderful. That's great. Well, you know, more than all, my blessings come from you. More than I really need a touch from you, and who you bless, no man can curse. Thank you for blessing me with your presence. Now, I have a couple of questions. Thank you. I have a couple of questions this evening. Good evening, Dr. Bernard. Good evening, Nurse Marshall.
Good evening.
Yes. Now, my first question, in light of the climate and the weather conditions across the world, what is the, in other words, for what reason should you keep breastfeeding instead of going toward formula? I know it may be more difficult for the mother, but in terms of lactation and in terms of the bosom, getting to the heart of the matter, why should a woman keep breastfeeding no matter what? You know, I was just listening to some of the benefits of a woman, a mother, breastfeeding is very important. My second question is, in light of the fact of now that, you know, that the breast is so important and to keep well and for a woman to be even younger, that breastfeeding is so important. In terms of children, Caribbean children, when women breastfeed, in terms of the knowledge of having being able to get through a formula, should a woman that has a disease such as COVID or cancer or any of those, should she continue to breastfeed or else stop and then restart when she gets better? Just asking. And my final question is, now, when you look at the ability to lactate and so on, and you have this wonderful fluid, this serum, this wonderful bite. If a woman wanted her baby to be vegetarian or vegan, get into that. Why is it that she should continue to breastfeed even though she wants the baby to be vegan from birth, so that she will use the vegetarian formulas? Why should she continue to breastfeed? Because I know it is important, I know it is very natural and so on, but that would cause the baby to be more vegetarian instead of vegan, because, you know, the milk itself is not exactly like just plant based. It's actual mammal based, which we are. So just thought I would ask that. So have a good day. Thank you. Bye bye. God bless.
Thank you so much, caller. As usual, you tend to bring questions that are either on my list or really make us think. Thank you so much for your call. I want to direct the question about breastfeeding and climate to Nurse Marshall, because interestingly, we had this discussion about what we should, and she said, you know, maybe we should have a discussion about climate, and I did not anticipate a caller bringing it up. But there's Marshall. We have very educated callers here on Better Health. Could you please tell us a little bit about the link between breastfeeding and climate?
Thank you very much, caller. Those are very interesting questions, and I hope that I'm able to give justification to at least some of them. So the impact of breastfeeding or breast milk on climate change is very significant. Not only is breast milk eco-friendly, so it is actually measured on the index of your carbon index as measuring zero. There's no need to produce any tins to store the breast milk in. There's no need to package. There's no need to ship. There's no need to do anything other than provide a supportive environment for the mother to be able to breastfeed. So in fact, because climate change is causing so much effects on our weather and the instability of different systems, particularly shipping and of that nature, I would like to suggest that the child or the infant between 0 to 6 months has a sustainable way of having nutrient-dense food delivered even in the face of any climate or any catastrophe once the mother is available. So indeed, breast milk is superior than the formula from that perspective, that it offers zero on our carbon index, on our water index, in terms of what we're using to further much enhance our ability to decrease this whole trajectory of climate demise. Or, you know, that's my answer for that one. And as it relates to the milk being vegetarian and the baby being, you know, fed milk that is from a mammal, it is intended for mammals. So the milk is designed for a mammal, that is the human being out of the human mother. So that it's actually designed from the creative energy or the body produces the milk directly for the baby. So there's no risk the baby will not be vegetarian or flexitarian or anitarian. The baby will be breastfed, and that will be the status, receiving the milk that was designed for it to be able to grow to maturation between 0 to 6 months.
Very good point. So no chances of nutrient deficiencies in that time either, because the breast milk has everything that it needs. So those are excellent points.
I just wanted to add something really quickly, Dr. Lewis. And the other thing is that anything other than breast milk going into babies will always be inferior, because we know that breast milk changes and adapts as the baby grows. So I can't imagine that there's any vegan milk, and of course we know formula, no milk other than the breast milk that will adapt in the same way and will provide the nutrition as optimally as breast milk will. But, you know, there's nothing to compare. There's nothing to compare to it. So there's no vegan milk that will supplant what the mummy can produce from her body. I just wanted to make that point very clearly.
Excellent. And also about having COVID and breastfeeding, there was lots of research that suggested that the mother who is positive might even be offered immunity to the baby. So they actually pros to breastfeeding during COVID. It would help the mother to maintain her bond and so on. And the risks are actually minimal. You know, it's encouraged. I can't imagine a lady who has cancer, only if she's on drugs that are contraindicated.
But even stick a pill, because that's actually one of my questions. We're going to talk about contraindications, the things that mummies that can't breastfeed. But I want to take this call. We don't let our callers hold on too long. So I'm just going to take this call. Caller, welcome to the Better Health program this evening. Do you still have the caller on the line?
Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, good evening. Good evening. Welcome to Better Health. Good evening.
Pardon? I would like to ask a question, please. What causes Virgo? What is caused Virgo? Hello?
Mom, I'm not so clear. Your question to
is it Virgo or Vertigo you're asking about?
What causes Virgo?
She says Virgo. She's asking what would cause Virgo to come on. Could you describe what the situation is to the good doctor, please? So she can...
the giddiness.
Yeah, I think she means vertigo.
Yes. When you lay down, it's spinning. And when you get up, you got to be careful before you fall.
Right. So I'm going to attempt to answer your question very quickly because we aren't talking about vertigo this evening. We really are talking about breastfeeding. We do want our guests to have as much time to go into that as possible. But vertigo usually is due to imbalance in the fluids in the ear.
I will put down and listen.
All right. You go ahead, put down and listen to the good doctor. All right. Okay.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome, ma'am. Take care. Bye, doc.
Right. So usually what's happening is an imbalance with the fluids in the ear, and there are a number of causes for vertigo, but basically it's usually a condition of the inner ear that's causing that dizziness. Yeah? And it's something that you really, if you're having it, you should seek your, you know, you should go to the doctor just to have a checkup, and then they would be able to recommend the appropriate treatment. I hope that's helpful. All right, so I want to continue the discussion because, like I said, the caller asked about what we in the medical field would term contraindications, but to the public, who are those mothers? What are those conditions that might not allow a mother to breastfeed? Because we always say we do not want mothers who cannot breastfeed to feel guilty as though they're not doing what's best for their babies. Who are those mothers who might not be able to breastfeed? Dr. Bernard, would you be able to answer this question for us?
Yeah, I can add a little clarity on that. So there are not many contraindications to breastfeeding. There really aren't many. So there are certain conditions, inherited conditions, like something called galactosemia, which many people would not have heard about. But basically, it's the inability of the body to actually process the sugar called galactose. It's actually a part of the larger sugar called lactose, which most people might have heard about. You're not able to process it, and because you're not able to process it, it builds up in the bloodstream, and it can cause a myriad of negative effects. So, and because it's found in milk products, babies are not then able to breastfeed, because, of course, breast milk contains a lot of lactose and galactose, and they're not able to use things like cow's milk, etc. So that would be a contraindication. Another contraindication would be, it depends on, so maternal HIV is considered a contraindication in instances where, for example, mothers are not on antiretroviral therapy, or if she is on the therapy and not consistently taking it, especially if she's not taking it in pregnancy and then when she has baby. But here in Barbados, although we would have access to antiretroviral therapy, the Ministry of Health policy is, despite the fact that we have access to those drugs, because there is still a risk of transmission to the baby. I believe it in studies, it's, I think, in 1% or less than 1%. They still do not, there's no policy about breastfeeding for HIV positive mothers. So just to be clear, here in Barbados, it's considered a contraindication if you have HIV. Although, you know, they say, for example, if you're in a third world country where you don't have access to those drugs, or rather you have access to the drugs, and you don't have access to potable water, which is what will be required to make formula, then they say the risk benefits of having a mummy on antiretroviral therapy versus baby getting cholera or some other gas, some other enteric disease, you have to weigh the balances. So here in Barbados, it's contraindicated, but in other countries, it is not contraindicated for mothers to have HIV and breastfeed. And there are other infections. Okay. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
And then obviously the mothers who may be on illicit drugs, for example, opioids or cocaine. But of course, if they're on methadone-assisted therapy programs, then they're encouraged to breastfeed. But if they are on illicit drugs, that's a contraindication. And there's also contraindication in mums who have human T-cell lymphocytic viruses, type 1 or type 2. Those are some of the contraindications. And then they mention of if a mother who is suspected of Ebola virus, and this is all CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, information regarding the contraindications to breastfeeding. There are other reasons why you should stop maybe temporarily breastfeeding, but these are the actual contraindications.
All right. So I think one of the things that I want our listeners to go away with is that there are few contraindications that you said. So most mothers, vast majority of mothers, will be able to breastfeed. And that kind of leads into my next question, because I think sometimes mothers do not breastfeed because they think that they're not capable. They experience a number of difficulties in terms of either initiating or maintaining breastfeeding.
I don't know if it's a good time to interrupt you here, Doc, because that seems a topic that you're about to discuss. WhatsApp is asking this general query. I guess you can tie it all in. They're asking what can make breastfeeding difficult for newborns. So I guess you can tie that in with your answers when you're ready, please. What can make breastfeeding difficult for newborns?
Greg, some of the listeners are reading my mind this evening. We have excellent listeners. That is the exact question that I was about to ask in terms of difficulties that mothers or babies might have during breastfeeding. And I know both Nurse Marshall and Dr. Bernard, you have experienced counseling mothers. And so you're not only speaking from a textbook perspective, but from your experience. So I'm going to ask Nurse Marshall, can you tell us some of the difficulties that mothers might encounter with breastfeeding?
One of the psychological problems is not supportive families. And to be honest, the industry or the industrialization of formula feeding that occurred back in the 50s and the 60s really impacted the way people view the value of the milk. And sometimes a mother might, you know, she's a new mom, she goes home, she's in a house with elderly parents or elderly grandparents or aunties or so on, who might not have been to the same classes, that don't understand the value of the breast milk. I would instill in the mother's mind, the milk is not enough, or, you know, she shouldn't do it, or something like that. So these non-supportive spaces really can impact on the psychological of the woman being able to actually breastfeed. Sometimes, because there's a lack of lactation consultants, I mean, most public health nurses are trained, all public health nurses are trained to be able to offer support and counseling and guidance. But of course, if you don't know how to access, or if it's a weekend and the clinics are closed, then you might run into challenges. But sometimes the breast can become very engorged. That is, like, very, very, very swollen. And a lot of the times, if you live with a house with a granny or an auntie around, they would tell you, you know, to apply a warm compress, or, you know, to do some other method that would allow the milk to come. But if you don't have access to this extended family or these particular resources, then the breast is so painful that can impact your ability to breastfeed, you know? sometimes women are challenged because they have to go back to work. Sometimes it's the body image. Sometimes it's the struggle of actually performing the breastfeeding and not only offering breast milk, but sometimes there's no school of preparation. I mean, we could do our best to tell you how it's going to be, but until you get that baby to latch on, that latch is so critical, because if that latch is not established, you can get the cracks, then you can get this notion that the baby only likes this breast, you know, or the baby's only using this side. So these particular challenges, maybe the solution is there to call your healthcare provider or contact the breastfeeding support group, because there are answers to those particular problems. You know, there are ways that we can talk you through and counsel you to be able to, you know, give support. But if this doesn't happen, you know, it's just one of these things, and we don't want women to go away. I mean, we push the breast milk so much that sometimes a woman who's not able to do it can express this depression. And that's what we don't want to happen. We want to say, if there are challenges and your healthcare provider has said, well, okay, let's work together to see how best we can work through this together. So you're not in it alone. And that's the point I want to make. You're not in it alone, despite what happens and what challenges come up. Because every individual, and it's not like a book. Sometimes, Allison, you know, you would see a patient that just feels she's not doing a good job because she thinks that the milk isn't enough, and she's measuring a bottle. She's thinking, I should be producing 8 ounces. When I express, I only get this amount, not understanding that there's a mechanism, and the milk is constantly being produced. So with exposure and decreasing that knowledge deficit, these mummies become champion breastfeeding moms, you know? And those are my contributions. Dr. Ali?
I just wanted to say really quickly that actually, you know, they're determinants of breastfeeding. I mean, they're clear determinants of breastfeeding, and what will encourage or allow a mum or enable a mum to breastfeed. I mean, and you have to think about it from the structural perspective. Is it the messaging she's getting from, as you said, family members, you know, why are you still feeding that baby the breast milk? Maybe too old. Or, you know, is it that she's getting messages from big formula to say, yeah, we know it's tiring, we know it's too much for you, but here, look, there's formula. You can just have some formula. That'll make your life easy. It's convenient for you. So it's the messaging that they're getting. It's then also, as Michelle said, it's the support system. So not just family members, but the healthcare support system. Do they have enough of it around? What about the policies that are, because you can actually give mums all the information about benefits of breastfeeding, but if there isn't an enabling environment for them to do it in, they're still not going to do it as optimally
as we want. That's what is talking about, enabling parents, enabling, and not parent, enabling parents. Mm-hmm. I mean, about all inclusive kind of.
Go ahead.
And I was saying, ladies have touched on a number of things, because you talked about the support, and I want to talk about the role of fathers in supporting breastfeeding. And then a little bit later, you know, the role of the workplace in supporting breastfeeding. But right now we have a caller, so I'm going to pause and take that call. Caller, good evening, and welcome to the Better Health Program.
Good evening to you. I'm going to address you again, Dr. Lewis. This is Anthony Hope here. Good evening to Dr. Bernard, again, Dr. Lewis, and to the esteemed Gregston Seeley. Now, what I want to know is, I have about 3 questions. However, I'm going to do them in piecemeal. How important is it in terms of immunity for the babies, in terms of the disorders that we are speaking about? And how important is it for the fastest protection for babies in terms of breastfeeding, where the quickest wear is the, and the most protective wear is the immunoglobulin M or IgM, which comes from the breast milk of the mother. It doesn't come necessarily and effectively and quickly from external sources. And then I'll ask my final question.
You can go ahead and ask the questions, though.
Pardon me?
You can go ahead and ask the final question. I'll let them answer them.
One, I wanted to say, isn't that good enough? The question isn't answered, however, I'm going to split my statement. Isn't that good enough to make sure that you rally mothers to breastfeed babies at all times because of the IgM? And finally, I heard the statement that breastfeeding also increases intelligence. And in my work on genetics, I know that intelligence is increased by GC content, which is glycine and cytosine. Not glycine, sorry, guanine and cytosine. I'm wondering which avenue it goes to that the breast milk, because I'm forgetting a lot of my research on breast milk, leads to that increase. I know it's enzymatic, but which level, through which reaction, and at the age and weight of the baby that determines that increased intelligence overall?
Well, very, very heavy questions. I wouldn't like to be you ladies sitting in the hot seat, but I know that you can handle it. And so, either Dr. Bernard or Michelle, if you want to just weigh in on the whole issue of immunity, breastfeeding and immunity, and then that link, I know Nurse Marshall had mentioned that link between breastfeeding and IQ. So I'll let Dr. Bernard talk about the immunity, and then I'll go over to Nurse Marshall.
Well, I have to say that unlike the gentleman caller, and thank you for the question, caller, I'm not a geneticist. I am not an infection diseases consultant. All I can say is that he's quite right. The maternal milk contains IgM, IgA, and IgG isotypes, and they are absolutely important for, perpetuating the level of immunity that you see in breast milk and in babies who are breastfed. It's the IgA in particular that actually helps, it coats the stomach, and it actually helps to provide that level of protection against things like ear infections and gastroenteritis and respiratory illnesses. So there are absolutely important. His question, I got a little confused as he seems to be saying that there was IgM and IgG in breast milk, and if that wasn't enough the question confused me a little bit. I think
he was making the point that because of the benefits that children, that babies will have in terms of building their immunity, that should almost be enough to encourage mothers to breastfeed.
Oh, that's an easy one to answer. I think that if you don't bring down breastfeeding to practical terms, all of that information is challenging for mothers. I don't think mothers want the best for their babies, but telling them about IgM and IgG and IgA, yes, on a superficial level, they're like, okay, what they hear is breast is best, but we've been hearing that for I think that adage has been used for 40, 50 years, but we are still, mm-hmm. over the last 30 years, we have seen very little increase in average breastfeeding rates worldwide. So why is that? I think, and I'm just going to lay it out there, I think we're laying it on the mothers, and I think we should stop doing that. I think we should stop kind of saying, well, if they know the benefits, should that be enough for mothers to breastfeed? And I don't think it's as simplistic as that. I think that mothers are being aggressively marketed to by companies that manufacture breast milk substitutes. And sometimes it is really hard for them to make impartial nutrition choices about how they're going to feed their children. So I don't think it is all about mothers. I think, as we always say, you have to take a societal approach to this. And yes, give them the information, but then you provide an enabling environment for them to be able to make the optimal choice. All right,
absolutely. Dr. Bernard, you touched on marketing, and I just wanted to go into that a little bit. Marketing of breastfeeding substitutes, because I know that that's a major issue when you have some conventions and different things surrounding that. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right, so the International Code of Marketing of Breast Milk Substitutes, not well known outside of public health circles, but basically it's a policy framework that was developed by WHO and UNICEF back in 1981, and it's just basically a collection of policies that and that helps to regulate the marketing, the aggressive marketing of formula, so that it protects breastfeeding. So the formula industry, they make billions and billions and billions of dollars every year. And they also have a lot of funds for marketing. In the breastfeeding world, we don't have as much funds. We don't have as much marketing funds. So the issue is created that when mothers are getting messaging, and certainly during COVID, they ramped up the marketing as well, in terms mm-hmm. of going digital, social media, and so on, and then going to baby groups, baby and me groups, and saying, hey, look, I know how hard it is. It's so difficult for you, but you know, maybe you could try this. And so they have created an environment that helps to, I think, decrease the confidence that mums have in their bodies to breastfeed. The confidence to know that their body can do it, and we know that less than 5% of mothers cannot actually breastfeed. So, and breastfeeding is 99.999% breastfeeding, as I always say. So that is the issue with the international code. The problem here, the issue here in Barbados is that we have voluntary compliance to the code, which means that yes, we've adopted it voluntarily, which means that a lot of the regulations, we know them, we hear them, and you know, but it's a hit and miss whether they're being implemented or not. And I think we're at the stage now in Barbados with less than 20% of our mothers exclusively breastfeeding, where we have to say, well, we need to fully enact the international code into law. And we know that when countries do that, breastfeeding rates increase. So that's
absolutely, we need the evidence. We need to go with the evidence, because we understand that, you know, we can't just have loose things out there, but we need something that really drives the behavioral change that we want to see.
And unfortunately,
I know we've been talking. Yes, absolutely. I know that we've been talking quite a bit about creating a supportive environment, and I really wanted to segue the discussion into that part, creating a supportive environment. And Nurse Marshall, you're the one who actually brought that up, and I wanted to ask first about the role of fathers in breastfeeding, and then I would like us to talk a little bit about the role of the workplace, because we know that this year's theme surrounds allowing persons who are working to breastfeed, creating a supportive environment in the workplace. So Nurse Marshall, first of all, can you tell us about the role of fathers in breastfeeding? Because we think a lot about the mother, but it's a family and a whole society approach.
I think fathers are so important, not only because of they're irreplaceable. I mean, the role of father, you know, you can only have one, if one father there with you, you know? And I think that the father supports the mother by way of being there to help her along the process, being there to offer her encouragement. The reality that the breastfeeding art is very tiring. So be there to offer you those gentle massages on your shoulder just to remind you that you can do it, to offer you that. You know, encouragement is so underrated, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, even if we were to, so fathers can be part of the offering of the breast milk, because they're not actually doing the breastfeeding. But for those moms out there that have expressed their breast milk and have it stored, when they're getting their night rest, daddy can up and he can also do the night duty. So when baby gets up, he can offer the breast milk to baby, and mommy can actually have extended hours of rest. Daddies mm-hmm. can participate. But, you know, just to me, just being there for the moms, you know, because there's really nothing you can actually do in terms of service, except it's service to the mother. Is that clear?
Yeah, excellent points. And I think that's very important, not just daddies, but other persons in your household as well. Allison, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I just wanted to say as well, too. I think fathers have a really important role. Certainly my children's father had a really important role in terms of being that gatekeeper who stood in front of me and kind of supported me in terms of parenting decisions that we made, nutrition decisions that we made. It can be very, very difficult to maintain those, especially when you've just had a baby. You're very vulnerable, you're very susceptible to family members and their advice, and everybody wants to come in and give you a piece of their, put in their 2 cents. And daddies can do that. They can be the parent that says it. They can be a breastfeeding. If you get to them early enough, I'm pregnant, I would say, make sure you get to fathers before the antenatal clinic. Get to them in antenatal clinic. And then you have a breastfeeding advocate for life. I've seen that so many different times. And they're like, no, not my baby having breast milk. That is it, right? So, and they can actually help to defend parenting decisions around nutrition and other parenting decisions because they, mommy and daddy, are on the same page. So I think that's so important. And also they need to also be the ones to have it because mommy is tired and she's vulnerable. They need to also have the information about where to go for support. I've actually had not the mommies call me for consultations, but the daddies. Yeah, just letting you know, my wife, and they're the ones that have the information. They're the ones that call, and they're the ones on the phone telling me what's happening with breastfeeding. And I'm like, thanks so much for this information, Dad. And then I'm like, okay, let me speak to mommy now, because obviously she's the one in the trenches as well too. So, you know, I think daddies and partners, very, very, very important in this process as well. I mean, the evidence supports it as well.
Absolutely. And Dr. Bernard, I just want to go straight then into the discussion about having a supportive environment in the workplace. I know the theme is let's make breastfeeding and work, enabling breastfeeding, making a difference for working parents. Yeah. And I want you to tell us a little bit about what you think. Do you think that we have a supportive environment in the workplace? And if not, what do you think needs to be done to create that for women that are going back out?
No, I would not say across the board. Okay, in a nutshell, I don't think that our environment is supportive enough. I would have done some research when I was doing my master's, and the vast majority of the moms I spoke to said none of the employers said, no, you can't pump. No, sorry, not none. Maybe one did, but basically they said that they were an afterthought. They didn't think about it at all. So it's only when they got back to work that they basically were saying, well, I really want to continue pumping. And the HR, whoever, said, sure, go ahead. And it was left to them to create the environment for how they were going to pump when they got back to work. And they had to do the work. And I think that one makes mothers feel like an afterthought. They feel sidelined and they feel marginalized. And I think that by itself alone can make a mother decide not to breastfeed anymore. Like, I'm a bird. Some of them said to me that they felt like a burden, especially when their peers were giving them the side eye about going off and pumping. They were made to feel as though they were shirking their duties.
Yes. I mean, pumping is actually very important in terms of keeping that milk supply.
It is the only way. If a mom is if a baby, when she goes back to work at 3 months, because by the way, we only have 3 months maternity leave, and sometimes if they take that beforehand, they don't have the full 3 months after. So if you only have 3 months of maternity leave, before you go on leave, your baby's used to feeding, I don't know, 8 times a day, say, and then you go back to work where your baby has fed once off of you during the day, and then when you get home, they try to make up for it. But the fact is that you still are not getting in the same amount of feeds you were getting in prior to going on maternity leave. And we all know breastfeeding is demand and supply. If you demand it, your body will supply it. So if your demand drops, your supply will drop as well. So the only way to maintain that is by going to work and pumping. The only way to do it, pumping, or if you have a nice boss and they allow you to bring the baby to work, you can breastfeed. I actually don't think that any employers in Barbados will. I don't think that is absolutely necessary. It'd be wonderful, but I don't know that it is necessary. But you know, so that is what I think. And in order to, so when we started, we created breastfeeding workplace policy guidance. You asked me what I thought was necessary to enable the environment, certainly in the workplace. And I think one of the things that you can do, so apart from having longer maternity leave, which is obviously optimal and the ideal, at least 6 months, and lovely would be a year or more. But, you know, if they're being realistic, that is not something that we are expecting now, although we would like it now. So in the interim, I'm saying at least have legislated, not it's up to them to make that decision. Legislated breastfeeding workplace policy. So we know that there are some employers that will do it. But we know that there are some who understand the benefits to their employee, their organization. But for those who don't and those who decide not to, there needs to be some kind of legal recourse. There needs to be, and in order to enforce, and so it's equitable across the board that all mothers have access to this benefit, which is what it would be, not just to them and their child, but to the employers as well, then it needs to be legislated. And so that is what we, you know, the just like the international code, these things need to be in law in order for enforcement and implementation. That's it in a nutshell.
Excellent. I can agree with you more.
Yeah, excellent point. And I think that is a major barrier, like you said. A lot of the women, they go back up to work, that's when the, you know, the milk supply drops, and that's when they stop breastfeeding. So it's something that we really need to look at as a nation, because there is a link between breastfeeding and NCDs. And I know, Nurse Marshall, you sit as the head of nutrition on the NCD commission, and I just wanted you to just share with us very, very quickly, what do you see as the link between breastfeeding and this battle that we have with NCDs?
Well, the evidence is a bit controversial, but it is there. So there's several studies that have said that it offers a protective role. So it can protect you against type 2 diabetes, hypertension, some forms of cardiovascular disease. And I think primarily this is due to the fact that there's a high amount of protein in formula. And because there's so much protein in the formula comparatively to what's in the breast milk, this obviously leads to an increase in the insulin growth factor, which is a type 1, that would lead to excess weight gain. So because of the excess weight gain and obesity being one of the foundation or one of those variables that exist in most of the NCDs, we recognize that breast milk can be one of those primordial or early interventions that really decreases the in adult life of developing these said diseases. These studies were done as it relates to the amount of sodium and fatty acids found in the formula. There's been some talk about, you know, just the way it is produced, and it leads to insulin resistance in the elderly. And then by chance, you know, that kind of sets the metabolism forward to having this kind of insulin resistance and all that. So I think personally, I can't agree with more with Dr. Allison. And I think that legislation really should be put in place from a nutritional perspective that offers the mother that flexibility in terms of working hours to be given an allotted time for expression. And there should be, in terms of policy, a lactation room or a space made available through human resources. I mean, they may not have to literally build a room if they don't have the capital, but she can use the boardroom or an office. And there should be a fridge in there to allow her to safely store the milk, so that it wouldn't just be a matter of expressing for comfort and to keep the supply and demand going, but it will also be useful for baby at a later date. So there is no contraindications to say, well, look, breast milk from the nutrition perspective definitely offers a probability that there will be a decreased risk of you developing type 2 diabetes, which we know is so prevalent in Barbados and across the world, that's something that we can really look at. Helping women, you know, how do we help you to breastfeed better? Offering flexi hours if you're breastfeeding, give you some early time. And then you wouldn't have to worry about your colleagues saying you're shirking work because you'd be actually leaving probably 2 hours earlier. I think this is a policy in Venezuela where the women can actually go home an earlier day. And if in fact WH, if you're serious and we know that it is really 6 months we really want the babies to breastfeed for, let the maternity leave reflect this 6 months. And I know we may have challenges with our gross domestic product and all the conversations for the economists, because I'm not an economist. I'm promoting a social responsibility. So I guess they will figure out how we can get it done. But we could say in the long run, it would decrease the amount of money, the $825 million we're spending currently now on NCDs, if we invest in women during this time for future projections.
Okay, yeah, Doc, before you carry on, and we are very short on time here, and that's why I'm interrupting you here, because this was here for a little while. And I hope I get the pronunciation correct. They're asking you to describe the condition, or they're asking what would a condition called ankyloglossia? Is there such a thing?
It's tongue-tied.
All right. I hope I got that's it close to something that you recognize.
That's tongue-tied. Yeah, that's essentially tongue-tied. And I was going to say it's common. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the rate is here in Barbados, but certainly, it's basically when the frenulum underneath the tongue is, positioned, closer to the tip of the tongue, making it a little bit more difficult for babies to be able to protrude the tongue. And sometimes that can have challenges in terms of latching on to the breast. But there's still a lot of, I don't want to say controversy, but tongue tied does not mean your baby cannot breastfeed. I've had babies with tongue tied who breastfed perfectly fine. It is not something that will absolutely determine whether your baby can breastfeed. But if your baby has challenges with breastfeeding and is tongue tied, then obviously that's something you will absolutely need to get lactation support, and maybe other disciplines may need to be involved as well. But that's tongue tied.
Well, I hope New WhatsApp heard the response. Okay, Doc, over to you.
All right, so I know we're wrapping up the show, but I really want to get a sense, because Nurse Marshall, I agree with you that breastfeeding is very important in the discussion surrounding NCDs. We can't leave it out when we talk about childhood obesity. Our high rates, we have to talk about the foundation. That starts even, you know, before the woman is pregnant, getting her nutrition in order while she is pregnant, and then encouraging her to breastfeed. But, you know, there's this perception that you said, I know the formula can pack on weight, and a lot of mothers feel like the babies, they're not getting enough milk when they're breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to ask you, Dr. Bernard and Nurse Marshall, how do you know that baby is getting enough milk? How is the growth of breastfed infants really assessed?
Well, when I do my consultations with women, and often it's a perceived low milk supply issue that these mums often have, you know, it's often not an actual low milk supply issue. It might be a demand and supply problem. And once you fix that with either lateral positioning, then the milk supply increases. But in terms of assessing when mummies are breastfed and they're concerned that their babies are not getting enough, I say, okay, let's see, what's the urine output? What are the peas doing? How's baby peeing? What's the frequency? How is baby opening bowels? How's baby pooping? And then also I look at, is baby satiated after a feed? So babies are not stupid. If baby is not getting enough milk, baby is going to continue to cry. That's just how they work. That's how they communicate that there's something wrong. And then obviously how babies are growing. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. So if you're concerned that your baby is not actually getting enough food, and you think that your latch is fine, you think that you're positioning well, and you think baby pooping and peeing while you're still concerned, that's the point at which you go and get baby weighed. And then what the doctors will do, they will plot them on a growth chart, which is usually WHO growth chart, which is basically they took a whole bunch of breastfed babies, because they stopped using formula-fed babies, because of course formula-fed babies tend to be bigger, and then the breastfed babies plotted against that chart were seen to be underweight, but actually the breastfed baby is the normalized standard, actually. So they plot you on a WHO World Health Organization growth chart, and then you can see if your baby is falling along the percentile line that baby's supposed to be falling on. So you look at peas, poops, if baby's satiated after a feed, and then you have them weighed, and those can tell you whether baby's putting on weight adequately.
Yeah, I think that's important to take away because people tend to, you know, older persons tend to pressure young mothers into starting formula. They say, you know, the baby looking scrawny, mm-hmm. and they just assume and they start. So if you think, first of all, the baby, how many times should the baby be pooping a day or passing water a day on average? What are you looking at?
So in the first 24 hours, I would say maybe once or twice, baby getting colostrum, they ain't peeing a lot. By day four or five, maybe they're pooping four or five, or peeing and pooping four or five times a day. So it gradually goes up over the first 4 or 5 days. So let's say day one, maybe they're peeing once or twice, day two, twice or three times, and it goes up like that. But by day five of life, pee should be in excess of 5 or 6 times a day.
Yeah, so you're changing your nappy in excess of 5 or 6 times a day. And as long as that's happening, you're comfortable. If it's not happening, don't assume I'll pump the child with formula. Take the child to the pediatrician. It may be a completely different problem. So take the child to the pediatrician. Yeah, so we want to drive that home. So I want to thank both of our guests this evening, Dr. Bernard, Nurse Marshall. You have been excellent on the program. Dr. Bernard, if you could just tell us the contact numbers for the BCNF, because you do offer lactation counseling and other services. If you could just put that information out there and your social so that people would be able to reach you.
Right. So the number would be 828-8934 or 828-6671. That's to contact the BCNF. The Facebook is at the BCNF, at BCNF3, and the Instagram is at the BCNF. But once you put in the Breastfeeding and Child Nutrition Foundation, you'll find us. You'll find us on, it'll come up on the website, so you'll find Insta and Facebook.
Great. And Nurse Marshall, if there's anything that you wanted to say, just any parting words in 15 seconds, 30 seconds or less.
If your baby is completely breastfed and has not poo-pooed between 5 to 10 days, there's no need for alarm. You can call your health care provider, speak to your pediatrician or your public health nurse to find out, but babies can go for more than 10 days without having a poo once they're completely breastfed, and that is normal. Thank you.
Agree.
Okay, so we want to thank both of you ladies for sharing with us from your experience. We're very grateful for this discussion. We want to remind persons of the importance of breastfeeding, encourage young mothers to breastfeed. Persons who are in the house, whether it be the partner, whether it be the mother, the grandmother, please offer support to these young women and remember the resources out there that you can get in contact with so that you can that can help you in the process. And we also want to signal to our government, we need a supportive environment for mothers if we are going to tackle the many healthcare issues that we are faced with. It starts at, well, before breastfeeding, but breastfeeding is one of the foundational concepts. So we need to look at legislation, we need to look at creating that supportive environment in the workplace. Once again, this has been Better Health. We want to thank our listeners and those who called in, those who were just listening, those who sent messages. We're grateful for your interaction. As always, we thank you, Gregson and Starcom Network, for continuing to support this program. And I want to wish everyone a lovely week.
All right. Thank you so kindly, Doc, and of course, her guests this evening. And of course, next weekend, as per the usual, another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. Until then, have yourselves a wonderful evening. And we continue with our next program. Up next, we've got for you the Just Jazz program with Cheryl Holder. You've just been listening to the Better Health Radio Show.